Welcome to Keyframe, part of the Geek Show podcast network. And we are here with Rob,
Hello.
Tucky,
Bonjour.
and myself, Lewis. And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about today. But first, Rob has some stuff to tell us.
Yes. Keyframe is a show on the Geek Show Podcast Network. And if you like what we do, because we like what we do, but if you like what we do, then you can support us by either making a donation or by buying one of our lovely bits of merchandise from our shop. You can find both those links on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk. If you have an idea for a show or you want to get in touch with us for any reason whatsoever, maybe you want to complain about my haircut, not that you can see my haircut, but maybe you want to complain about it, you can send us a message on studio@thegeekshow.co.uk, or you can contact us on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, or any other place on the internet. Just search for us on Google. Anyway, on with the news. And first up today, NHK, the purveyors of one of the finest news channels I've seen on TV for a while, because it has such diverse things other than news, BBC take note. NHK are going to honour anime's 100th anniversary with a top 100 ranking. And I'm not sure how this is going to work out, because they're doing this as a public vote.
Ah, cool. Well, it's just going to become a popularity contest again, isn't it?
It is, and you know that Attack on Titan is going to end up in there somewhere, especially with season two coming out soon.
So is this like all anime ever then?
Well, it's all anime from 1907 to 1917.
Well, this is the thing, though. You've got over 100 years worth of anime to basically like scroll through, and the thing is, the majority of anime fans today only watch what's on Crunchyroll,
Yeah.
or what's popular, or what you can make the best memes out of. And it'll be a really unbalanced vote, because everyone's going to vote for whatever's hot at the time.
Well, yeah, but the interesting thing about this is there are two other top 100 polls listed on here. One of them is from 10 years ago, from 2006, which I found quite interesting because they had Fullmetal Alchemist. It was Asahi TV's top 100. And the top one then was Fullmetal Alchemist, then Neon Genesis Evangelion, Panini Dash, The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya, Nagima, Gundam, Bleach, Prince of Tennis, Frozen Maiden, and Strawberry Marshmallow, or Ichigo Mashimaro. And I found that interesting for the reason that what you said, Tucky, is actually borne out in that,
Yeah,
right?
that's the thing. I mean, you won't see Fullmetal Alchemist anywhere near the top of this one.
No.
Well, maybe top 20
I thought that
if
was
it.
quite popular.
It is hugely popular, but who remembers it now? People remember what's in front of them. They don't want to sit down and think, oh, what about this? What about this? What about this?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, even for me, I've watched not a massive amount of anime, but enough, but I don't remember the ones that I've seen a while ago so well.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at Anime News Network, have their own top 100 most popular, which they have Fullmetal Alchemist, Death Note, Cowboy Bebop, Spirited Away, The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya, Princess Mononoke, Elfin Lied, Neon Genesis Evangelion, and Code Geass, Lelouch of the Rebellion, and Bleach at number 10, right? And I always found that a bit odd, because I'm just using the top 10s as an example, right? If you go across to something like My Anime List, where you have an active user base, yeah, who
Yeah.
are constantly upvoting and downvoting stuff, the current number one anime on there is Your Name, the movie, followed by Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, Gintama, well, Gintama the with the little circle next to it, Steins Gate, Gintama again, Haikyuu, Hunter Hunter, Legend of the Galactic Heroes, Gintama Enchosin, Gintama the movie, Eternal Glory to the Yorozuya. And that's number 10. So Gintama actually appears four times in the top 10 on MAL.
Deservedly so, if you ask me.
Yeah. And I find it interesting because of those three, you didn't see anywhere Akira, Ghost in the Shell, Gundam,
One
Macross,
Piece.
One
Something
Piece,
tells me Akira
Cowboy
is one of
Bebop.
those anime a lot of people know, but only so many have seen.
Yeah.
That's just the impression I get, but.
Well, it's the same with Neon Genesis Evangelion. There are a lot of people who say, oh, I love it. Have you seen it?
I like the idea
Oh, well,
of
they're liar
it.
posers and they suck.
You know the old thing. It's peer pressure. You know, you don't want to be seen as being as not knowing about anime. So you say that you've seen a particular thing, and then you'll go away. You know, and you'll agree with people, but then you'll go away and you'll watch it, and you'll find that you didn't actually like it, but you've already told people that you've liked it. So you kind of stuck in that little mode then.
As you said, the anime fandom zeitgeist isn't that hard to read. It's just going to be what's popular and what's on in the zeitgeist at the time. And I think when it comes down to it, it depends on how seriously this poll takes itself. I mean, if they're going to reward the winning anime studio, like $5 million and be crowned the best anime since the inception of anime, then we might have a problem.
I don't think
just random people are voting for it, but
I don't think they're going to award any anime studio anything. I think they're just doing it because, hey, it's a fun thing to do. Let's all have fun. Where's that beer?
It's going to cause issues. You can't leave people to vote for anything.
Yes.
I said 2016 taught us one thing. People can't vote.
Yes,
people shouldn't be allowed to vote.
This is true.
Yeah, you know I'm saying what you need to do is you need to get a load of experts and reviewers and people who've actually sat there and watched the majority of the last 100 years of anime.
Yes.
I mean, I know it took them like a lifetime, but these people who've dedicated their lives to actually, you know, admiring it for more than just being like fan service or something like that, for more than because, oh, all my friends on Tumblr are sharing it. It's got to be like, you know, a proper base of experts in anime to sit down
and work it out.
Yeah.
Sounds like a large logistical task, but then again, if someone could do it, it'd probably be one of the more interesting polls out there. So,
well, here's the thing.
If they give us a fly on the wall view of that roundtable discussion of a lot of anime experts working out the last 100 years of the best anime.
Yeah.
I'd watch it.
Yeah, I'd watch it as well.
It would sound probably most likely something like this anime is one of the best anime of all time. The animation is exquisite and fluid. The plot development is quite well done and all of this good stuff. And then the next guy is just going to be like, I'd rather shove shards of glass into my eye and drown it with vinegar than watch that anime again. And then like a war happens or something.
Yeah, that's a future of reality TV. I would watch that.
In other words,
it's similar to what happens on the internet, except the opinions are considered to be more important because I've reviewed over 500 anime.
Well, no, when we're talking about experts, we're not talking about somebody who's reviewed over 500 anime. I wouldn't class that as an expert. I know a little bit about how criticism works, and there's a big difference between what you see on the internet and what they actually get paid to do. One of the key things that they teach people is if you're going to do criticism, then you have to do it fair. So you have to find the bad things in what you love and the good things in what you hate. You have to actually consciously look for them. You can't simply arbitrarily say, well, this is bad because of this. You have to be fair, and you have to be as objective
like
as possible.
Doing a proper critical analysis. Not what I expect from the typical review in English.
Yeah, but that's an English review. I think that's the key thing that we have to remember when it comes to the people who actually get paid to be critics over in Japan. We have to look at them in the same way as, say, movie critics here in the Western world. They get paid to do a job, and if they're not doing that job properly, then they're going to lose their job. So they have
to. There's some pretty crazy Western movie reviews from what I've seen, but
they're not getting paid by the BBC to do it. I mean, look at Mark Kermode when he does the movie reviews on the BBC. He might criticize it, but he tries to emphasize the good points of something that he doesn't like, because at the end of the day, that's his job. You know, that's what he's getting paid to do. Most of the critics that you see on the internet, they're just doing it because they can, because they have a keyboard and a computer in front of them. And so they feel it's a carte blanche for them to say whatever they want, not knowing that once they get a big enough name, they can get sued for some of that stuff.
That's the thing. It's with the internet reviewers, it's all got to be clickbait. It's stuff that's got to shock and surprise and want people to click on the link to their review. And that's part of the reason what's wrong with like the whole internet news thing now and why we're getting like fake news.
Yeah.
Just clickbait. It's just for advertising revenue.
Yep.
That's the main thing behind it. It's not love of like the anime, the show, the movie. It's just I want to cause outrage because it will get me so much in ad revenue.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad that it's that way, but eventually it might turn in on itself. I mean, we've seen things like this happen before. They tend to kind of fall in on themselves and implode rather than explode.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, moving on to trailers. So starting off with
Boss, baby boss. You want chili sauce with salad?
I didn't understand where you were going with that.
We talk about boss, man. Boss.
Okay, the boss baby. He's not having kebab with chili sauce and salad. He's having a bottle instead. Although, if it's Alec Baldwin, I could see him munching a kebab. That sounds wrong. That sounds very wrong.
I'll repeat.
So anyway, a new trailer's come out for a new DreamWorks movie called The Boss Baby, with Alec Baldwin playing the role of a baby who's also kind of a businessman, politician type thing. I don't know why, but for some reason the character reminds me of Donald Trump.
Yeah, I was getting like that sort of impression as well.
You know,
like mix of Donald Trump and Stewie Griffin character wise.
Basically, yeah.
Looks like Bruce Willis.
Yeah,
but yeah, like I saw the screen cap of it, and I thought, oh, this looks like one of those things where they have a weird gimmick and that's supposed to be what makes people laugh, but like the fact that they're using babies means that they can do a lot of funny stuff with it, and it looks like they know that and they're making good use of it, so it could be funny.
What's the story? Some kid gets a baby brother, and the baby brother turns up wearing a suit and carrying a briefcase, and decides he wants to set up a company called Baby Corp or something like that.
Sounds evil.
Yeah. He's got like a mobile phone and, or rather, he thinks it's a mobile phone, but it's just a toy phone. which is very Stewie Griffin when you get right down to it.
It's one of those animal phones. And yeah. Then when you buzz, 911, hello, you are talking to Pig.
Yes. It is very Stewie Griffin when you get right down to it. And I am not.
It's that head, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sure what to think about this. Alec Baldwin is. I like him because of some of the more recent stuff he's been doing, especially the Saturday Night Live Donald Trump stuff. Because he's
so
been
offensive. Donald Trump hated it.
Yeah, I know. It's great, but I'm not sure what to think of this. What do you guys think of this?
Well, I think it looks like it could be all right.
I don't know. It seems like putting like serious like middle aged men as comedic characters like that one with what's his name? House of Cards. Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
I think there's a movie coming out where he's a cat.
Yes.
And it's Alec Baldwin is a baby, and what's next? Bill Pullman is a hamster. I don't know.
Don't, because I can actually imagine that now.
I mean, obviously there's always been animated movies with kids in them, but it's been a big draw to getting kids into movies has been animals, and it looks like there's a bit of a shift, so...
I blame Johnny Depp, personally.
Yeah.
It's all Johnny Depp's fault. He's the one who started it with Rango when he played a chameleon.
I'm not too sold on the whole boss baby thing. I mean, I took the bairns out to see that Storks movie.
Yeah.
The one where the... Fraser Crane was the Kelsey... seagull or something like that.
Yeah, Kelsey Grammer, yeah.
Kelsey Grammer, yeah. If it's Kelsey Grammer's a seagull, you say it's daft things like that. Or a stork or whatever bird he was.
He was a stork.
And I was left disappointed by that movie. So, I mean, me expectations for Alec Baldwin as a baby would be set really low.
Yeah.
I mean,
to be fair, reflecting on it, like, I might be a bit biased because I just find precocious kids, they just make me laugh my ass off in real life and in fiction.
It's possible. Anyway, moving on to the next one, and this one's, I think, the big one, which is the new trailer for Despicable Me 3. I thought it all ended with 2.
It should have ended with 2, but it's money. Money,
yeah.
Money drives things, flogs that horse even more.
Despicable Me 3, and I'm not sure where this franchise is going now, right? The first movie I liked. Gru, who's always been a loner, gets a family and actually feels like he belongs somewhere for the first time. Yeah?
Yeah.
And then they followed on with that with Despicable Me 2. You know, it wasn't a great movie, but I thought it was a nice addition to the series.
Yeah, finally gets a significant other to look after the girl, so you've got
the family unit's complete then. And I think that's a good place to stop it. You don't need to follow on with a Despicable Me 3, the further adventures of Grucy, because that's what Lucy calls her and Gru in the trailer. and then have Gru paraded around in front of an office birthday party wearing pink bubblegum. Pink bubblegum mankini and nothing else. And then the whole idea of Balthazar Bratt, the 80s child star who's obsessed with the character he played, and picking Trey Parker to play the role of that character, of all the people, Trey Parker.
That sent me sideways when I saw Trey Parker. It's like, wow.
Yeah, it's
South Park's not paying that well, is it?
Okay, Boss Baby has, what's his face? Alec Baldwin, yeah?
Yep.
But it's like saying Boss Baby had Dana Carvey from Wayne's World playing the role of the baby. And you're like, okay, this does not make sense. Where the hell did he come from? That's out of left field. It's Trey Parker. He should not be allowed near a camera. I've seen the movies that him and Matt Stone made. You know, Basketball.
Orgasmo. Yeah. What was the other one?
Cannibal the Musical, wasn't it?
Aye. And also the Book of Mormon on stage play.
Oh, yeah, well. Yeah. And as much as I liked Basketball and Orgasmo and stuff like that years ago, they're not really good movies. They're not really actors. They're just a couple of guys in front of a camera just
messing about.
Yeah, just messing about. So Trey Parker, I am surprised at the choice.
Especially considering how risky all of his work is.
Yeah.
He's going for one of the biggest child safe brands out there.
Yep.
Well, so, expect more Minions merchandise for 2017.
Oh God. I'll be honest, I'm not looking forward to Despicable Me 3. I don't think I'm going to enjoy it.
I'll just wait till Christmas 2018 when it comes out on the BBC on Christmas Day.
Yeah, because it will. We know it will. Please, all you companies out there, just when it's a good point to stop the story, just stop the story. Do something else.
Unless you have a really, really, really good or unique series, in which case keep making more.
Well, it's one of the reasons why I like Leica as a production company, because they did Paranorman. They closed off that story really well. And that's it. They didn't do a Paranorman 2. They've done Kubo and the Two Strings. They've closed off that story. There's no plans to do a Kubo and the Two Strings 2, or maybe Kubo and the Four Strings, or Three Strings, or whatever.
Mm.
Kubo and the 12 Strings featuring Kiss.
No, it's not Kiss. It's Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. Anyway, moving on to something that made Tucky laugh. Miss Kobayashi's a Dragon Maid.
Fantastic. The premise of having a dragon that is also a maid. it's so anime.
Yeah, it is.
It's such an anime thing. Slice of life comedy about a hardworking office lady who has a dragon girl as a maid.
Yeah.
The main character is quite the straight man. And now I think about it, a lot of comedy anime don't really seem to emphasize the straight man much. But that can be quite funny, because Kill Me Baby for me went from initially not very funny at all because I was focusing on the character that was meant to be funny to quite hilarious when I focused on the assassin.
Yeah.
And her reaction to the stupidity that was going on around her. So could be interesting. And of course, we must point out, since we did talk about this before the podcast, that it has the jiggles as well. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they focused on the D cup in the actual trailer.
It's an interesting trailer because it's like the whole rapping sort of thing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Main character's apparently Vanilla Ice's daughter, apparently.
It was very Vanilla Ice. All you needed in the background was go ninja, go ninja, go.
Maybe that's why they sent a dragon after. Maybe
go dragon, go.
I like the whole concept. It seems like something that's more of a light comic relief that'll take your mind off the world.
It seems like a fun watch. It seems like something that could make you laugh a little bit. I think it's one that I'll be watching because I get the impression that I would have fun watching it.
Just the description as well. It's like normal office worker with a very persistent and amorous dragon as a roommate. that's a pitch to an NBC sitcom in America that just got green-lighted.
Yes, this is true.
And again, I think straight man characters, any comedy thing is going to have jokes that fall flat, but if you've got a straight man there, that can save it.
Yeah.
You can make an unfunny joke funny.
Speaking of straight men, I don't know. Would he be classed as one of the ultimate straight men in anime?
Who?
Shimura Shinpachi.
Yeah, definitely.
He is one of the ultimate straight men in anime.
He's like so serious, and he's got his little, like, his idol fan club as well.
Yeah.
Which is like a typical Japanese straight man. Straight down the middle.
And the thing is, I love the fact that he can be reduced to just his glasses. Seriously, when they talk about him, sometimes they just have like just have his glasses there. He's like, hang on, why am I just a pair of glasses?
And that's a hell of a segue to go through into the Gintama live action movie trailer.
I'm surprised by this. We've only got a small glimpse of it, and I think it's mainly to showcase the actors who are taking on the role of Gintoki and Kagura and Shinpachi.
Well, you've got to be very careful with this. Like you say, Mal, it's at like 4 of the top 10 anime.
Yeah.
So they've got to be really careful, because making anything into live action, it's going to have a hell of a critical response, especially in Japan.
And especially
I think that's why they've like kept it like short little clips, and they've even got the Gin-san shouting there. So
the thing is, Gintama has always been one of those where it's not so much when are we going to get a live action movie of it, or a live action version of it, but how are you going to do it? How are you going to capture the comedy, the insanity, the setting, the whole idea of Kabukicho in Gintama? How are you going to capture all of that in a live action form?
I think they've played it really safe with this one.
Yeah.
Especially because, yeah, I mean, you've got aliens you could have had, but they've just focused on the main three characters in really short clips.
Yeah.
And like I say, it's playing it safe, because if there was like a huge critical backlash now, it could have actually like put the whole project off.
Yeah.
But I think it would have, and that's why they've done it, played it safe, and it looks pretty awesome. I mean, they've got the character design down to a T.
Yeah, I agree.
So the aesthetics of it look really good, but it's where they take it from there, and what if they do another trailer, which they should eventually do at some point, what they're going to showcase in that one.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm not dwelling on that, because we want to run through the rest. An interesting one appeared called Mary and the Witch's Flower, which sounds very wrong. That is done by a bunch of former Ghibli staffers who created a new studio called Studio Ponoc.
Yeah, you can tell it's people from Ghibli, that's for certain.
It is so Ghibli, it hurts, isn't it?
Yeah, like, not just, like, the art style, but just the...
The characters just look Ghibli characters. They just look like Ghibli characters.
Yeah, but just, like, the use of animals and stuff as well. I'd say, like, the main difference is it's, like, a lot less sort of neutral colours.
Yeah.
Background artwork as well. Like, the whole art style just screams Ghibli.
And it's based on Mary Stewart's book, The Little Broomstick, which is all well and good. And this is set to debut in summer 2017. But I am just looking at this, and if I didn't know this was a different studio doing it, I would have immediately looked at this and thought, oh, it's a new Ghibli movie.
Not such a bad thing for the film production company, because they've got that whole aesthetic, which is like, it's exactly the same as like one of the biggest in the world.
Yeah.
So that mistaken identity could work in their favour.
This is true. Moving on from there to a light and web novel adaptation called Death March to the Parallel World Rhapsody. Now, it's been announced that this is getting an anime series, and I expected this ages ago. Although, what concerns me is, I'm not sure how they're going to do this and kind of do it justice. I think they're going to follow the manga adaptation of this, which makes a few more changes to the story. There's 15 volumes, if I remember rightly, so far in the web novel series, and the whole story is about a guy called Suzuki Ichiro. He's a 29-year-old computer programmer. He's currently working hard, and then he falls asleep. And then he wakes up in the middle of nowhere, and he's kind of going, oh, right, this is a dream. Because he's been working on a game, he thinks he's actually in the game, right? And he wakes up, and he's, like, level one, and he's got, like, no weapons or equipment. He's just got the clothes that he fell asleep in. And he's got, like, one spell called Meteor Shower, which, based on his current magic points, he can only use three times. And he sees all these red dots. He's like, oh, those must be enemies. There's not much I can do, so I'll use Meteor Shower. And by using that, he basically kills everything in the area because it basically summons a bunch of meteors that basically do a carpet bombing of the entire area. And everything gets wiped out, including the Dragon God. And he basically picks up a bunch of titles and becomes the strongest person in the world at that point, aside from demon lords and gods, right? In a world where most people are like level, the maximum level for a commoner is probably about 10. And then you go to the people who are actually knights and are basically dive into labyrinths and stuff like that. And they're what, 20 to 50? He's level 310 or 312 a bit later on. Do you see what I mean? And because he's such a high level and he gets skills just by doing something once, he's a ridiculous cheat character. And he realizes immediately that he's some kind of cheat and that there's something wrong with the way things work with regards to him. He basically brushes everything else off and decides he's not going to be a hero. He's not going to save the world or anything like that. He just wants to see what this world is like and wants to eat tasty food. So
he's being an observer then.
Well, he sets out to be less an observer and more a tourist.
All right.
He decides to become a tourist and go around seeing the sights and eating the food.
So they narcissistic selfies outside of landmarks.
Speaking of eating the food, there was a lot of girls around him in the trailer, so what's that about?
The first three are Pochi, Tama, and Lisa, and they're basically slaves. In this world, the humans and the demi-humans don't get on, and so in the human territories, the demi-humans are basically slaves.
Okay.
And he accidentally saves the three of them when their current master gets killed, and because he saved them, he inherits them, so they become his slaves. And even though he wants to free them, they don't want to be freed because then they'd be alone in human territory, they get enslaved again, blah, blah, blah. That's the whole idea behind that. And it is a harem. There is fan service. The whole idea of the relationship between them is a bit like the whole idea of the relationships in, say, Oh My Goddess, where, okay, there's a little bit of fan service, but it never actually crosses the line into anything untoward, or it's not supposed to. But there is fan service a lot more in this than there was in Oh My Goddess.
But the females are scarily clingy girls. They got that going on, right?
Well, not really. I mean, the nice thing about the way the web novel in that is written is that you see the character develop, the other characters develop. So it's not all from, well, he changes his name to Sato to protect his identity, but it's not all from his perspective.
Mm.
You know, you get it from the other characters' perspectives as well. So you get to understand a little bit of why they actually trust him so much and why they actually like him so much is because he's so very different to literally everyone else that they've ever met.
That is.
So anyway, right. Deathmatch, I've harped on about it. Let's move on to Old Man Astro Boy, as Andrew and I call this. Mm-hmm. Inuyashiki, it's a manga series by Hiroya Oku, who does Gantz, and that's getting adapted for live-action film and TV anime. And the odd thing about this is the main character, Inuyashiki, is an old man.
Are you sure he's an old man? Are you sure he's not a 15-year-old high school kid?
He's definitely an old man. He's definitely an old man. The idea is basically he's had a bad day. He's worked hard all his life. He's got two kids and a wife, and everybody seems to either ignore his existence or just basically doesn't even try talking to him. And he's beginning to question the whole reason why he's even there with the family. It seems like nobody actually respects him in his own family. His kids don't respect him. His wife doesn't respect him. And he's just kind of, look, I've supported them. I've tried my hardest for them. I've worked my ass off for them. What the hell did I do wrong?
Yikes. Sounds like a kind of adult fear sort of plotline.
Yeah, it is. Only for him to be sitting on a hill trying to make some sense of how his life became like this. And then he dies after being hit by a meteor, which turns out to be an alien spaceship.
Damn it, Suzuki.
Yeah. The only problem is the aliens killed him by accident, and so they reconstruct his body. And because the aliens are these kind of cybernetic beings, they reconstruct his body as best they can, but it's basically the body of a robot with the soul of a human.
Benevolent aliens, that's not that common.
No, it's not. The interesting thing about this is you've got this dichotomy with Inuyashiki. Someone else dies in the same incident, and it turns out to be a high schooler who is quite nihilistic. So you have this dichotomy between the old man who basically treasures and values life and the nihilistic teenager who wants to kill everything.
That's quite interesting, actually.
Yeah. And finally, this one is an interesting one. It's by the staff who did the Tatami Galaxy. It's a new anime called The Night is Short, So Walk, Girl. And it's based on a novel. It's getting an anime film adaptation at Science Saru Studio, which is a studio name that I absolutely love, because it's basically Science Monkey.
Mm.
I like the animation style of this. I mentioned it before that about the whole Studio Trigger thing. I'm not going to go into that again, but what did you guys think of this?
I don't know. Like, again, it's a short trailer, but obviously it's got an experimental art style, so if you like taking acid, this is for you.
I was going to say, the art style reminds us of that, the old iPod adverts.
Actually, yeah, you got a point there. Especially that bit where he's running with the beating heart.
Yeah, there seems to be like a few different ones, because they have the sort of iPod style with the solid colours and whatever.
Yeah.
And then they have the more normal looking bit. But yeah, who knows what's going on here.
I'm not sure either. I don't know anything about the novel it's based on. Then again, I like the art style, so this is one that I'm probably going to be sitting down to watch if I get the chance. You know, if it gets released, then I'll happily sit down and watch it, because I do like the Tatami Galaxy. I think it's an amazing series.
The main character's called Senpai.
Yes.
Nice.
And he's noticed...
It's a movie about a girl who falls in love with Senpai.
It might be a movie about Senpai who falls in love with a girl.
Oh, that is. It follows... I don't know whether... That's Senpai trying to get noticed.
Oh, the irony. I think this is a must-watch now.
It follows upperclassman Senpai who falls in love with underclassman girl with black hair.
tries to get
her attention. So yeah, Senpai trying to get noticed.
That makes sense. Explains the beating heart scene. So
yeah, I think this is a must watch now. Just the irony.
I think marketing knows what they've done there.
Yes, yes, I think they do. Anyway, we shall take a break there, and we'll be back with some anime stuff in a few moments.
Hi everyone, this is Andrew from the Geek Show Podcast Network here to tell you to go listen to 4Panel. We've got all the latest news and reviews on all things comic and manga, and of course, lots of jokes about the Ten-Eyed Man. Go listen to it!
Hello there, and welcome back to Keyframe on the Geek Show Podcast Network, and we're on to reviews. And first up is Lewis. What you got, Lewis?
Bam, bam, chitta, bam, bam, chillin. Pan pan chira pan pan chirain. Pan pan chira pan pan chirain. Pan pan chira pan pan chirain.
Punchline.
I was worried. The way you were saying it, it's either punchline or panty line. Which one is it?
Both. Or pancetta, if you like.
See, pancetta isn't that like Italian bacon or something like that?
I said panchilla, but.
All right.
Basically, it means panty peak, but. Yeah, that kind of sets the tone for this.
All right.
Punchline. Oh my god, what do I say about this anime? Well, it's developed by 5PB, which is like the same people who did stuff like Steins Gate and all of that.
Yeah.
So that kind of tells you that it's going to be a bit out there. But again, Punchline, as you sort of said, sounds like Pantyline or Panchita, which means like, again, panty shot. And as I said, it sets the tone. It's about a boy called Yuto Hiridatsu who lives at Koro House with four girls. And that setup sounds very familiar, which is important, but Yuto finds himself ejected from his body and becoming a spirit, and he's guided by a spirit cat called Chironosuke. And he has to learn to master his spirit powers in order to save the world from destruction, because on New Year's it's going to be hit by a meteor. And it's weird because it's a fan service anime, but it's not.
Okay.
It definitely is a fan service anime, but it's got this sort of really complex and intricate plotline. And in some ways it mixes well, but in some ways it kind of feels like it doesn't know what it wants to be. And I don't really want to put it that way because I feel like it does. This was made into an anime first. And yeah. then there's like a visual novel coming up of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, just what really stood out to me is that because this guy, he has like spirit powers, and if more he uses them, the more he levels up and becomes stronger. And Cinnamon, that's the one, makes him more powerful. But one power that he has is that when he sees underwear, he powers up. And then if he sees it twice, for some reason, it fast forwards to New Year and the Earth is destroyed. And it ends up becoming like a part of the plot, like something that he occasionally uses to, you know, fight back. But anyway, yeah. the characters are interesting enough. The characters definitely have their own personalities and backstories and motivations. And they have a lot of agency.
Yeah.
The female characters do. Like, for example, the main girl, Mikita Narugino, has an alter ego known as Strange Juice. And in the first episode, she's on a bus with the main character. Like, not with him, but he just happens to be on the bus. And one of the other characters happens to be on the bus, which is attacked. And you can, and then she uses her powers to essentially save everyone on the bus. So while it's like a fan service anime, it's like a superhero thing as well. It's the reason why my review sounds all over the place is because there are just so many sort of elements to it that all sort of come together, and it's really sort of hard to discuss it. But essentially, I guess the plot is Yuta, he obviously wants to save the world from destruction. Because he's been told, well, the world's going to end. You probably want to do something about that.
Yeah.
But because he's a spirit, he can't interact with the world, like, too much. Like, he can't make contact with things unless he levels up his spirit power, in which case he gets stronger poltergeist powers. It's just him sort of trying to figure out what's going on, really. And there's so many sort of... There's so many plot elements. So many plot elements that seem disconnected. And I'd say, like, the good thing is that, like, once you get towards the end of it, it does come together in a way that makes sense and is somewhat, like, satisfying. And I did have fun with it. It was quite funny. As I said, like, the characters were interesting enough. And one thing that's actually really good about it is the animation is really slick. It looks quite Studio Triggerish in some ways, but the animation and the fight scenes are, like, really good. And there's quite a lot of fight scenes as well. And they're animated so, like, they could be a bit more fluid, but they're animated really, like, extravagantly. Like, everything on the screen's moving, you know, especially with the mech scenes and all of that. But for me, like, the thing that just really stands out to me is just how many different plot elements there are. And it can get quite confusing to follow, especially in the middle.
Okay.
There's just so much happening, so much happening, both on the surface and below the surface. The character interaction is interesting because despite being a fan service anime with a male protagonist and living in a house with four girls, because the main character has the initial out-of-body experience and becomes a spirit and can't really interact with people, the character interaction focuses around the girls with each other for the most part. Showing the kind of things that girls talk about and how they interact with each other and, you know, I guess what they're like when boys aren't around and all of that, which is where a lot of the entertainment value comes from, really. And I thought that was pretty cool. You don't see... I mean, you do see that in anime, but it's often, like, cleaned up somewhat compared to, like, how girls can be when they're having a girls sort of thing.
It's interesting you brought that up because there was an anime from years ago, which I think they remade. It was simply called High School Girls. Mm. And it was the first time in anime where I actually encountered a series that focused on what girls are like when there's no boys around, right?
Yeah.
And you have these girls who are going into high school, and they've got this idea that all high school girls are glamorous and everything like that because they're going up from middle school. So they sneak into the high school. And they're having a look around, and then they go to the kind of the girls' locker room. They find that, to their horror, high school girls are just as disgusting behind closed doors and just as gross as high school boys.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it goes, like, that far with, I guess, the grossness. It just felt, you know, more real compared to most female character interactions with anime. Yeah. And, you know, they even had, like, a sort of fight moment and all of that, where they get more aggressive with each other and all of that. And yeah, I just thought that was pretty cool. But the characters getting along with each other, because Narugino is Strange Juice and she has to save the world, and then she has like her friend who helps her out with equipment and tech and all of that. And throughout the story, as more events happen,
yeah,
other characters become aware that something's up, and then they just sort of form a team. And then partway through the series, I guess the main character gets his body back, so he becomes more able to interact with them. But from that point, because, you know, it's about saving the world, like, his interaction with them is very, very interesting, because he's trying to maintain the secret, but he's trying to sort of just fix everything. And there's, like, time travel stuff in there. There's, like, body swap stuff in there.
It sounds like a mess of genres.
It is, in a way, but it just... it's hard to say if it works or not. I mean, like, as someone who, you know, tries to absorb all the detail of things, it kind of worked for me. But I feel like for a lot of people, it might be quite confusing to follow. Okay. But it was interesting at the very least, and I liked the fight scenes, I liked the characters. Mm. You know, I'd say it was decent, but it did feel a little all over the place, to be honest.
It sounds like one that you'd have to watch and make your mind up yourself about.
They definitely, like, knew what they were doing. And the ending is interesting as well, because the ending, it felt like it was earned, and it felt like it didn't feel like particularly Deus Ex Machina or something like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot of thought was put into it, but it's a 12-episode anime. I think it could have done with maybe double that or something, just so...
just to flesh things out a bit more.
I think it was like flesh, yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, I feel it was fleshed out enough for the most part, but
so maybe not a full 26 but episode. But
it was more that a lot of the exposition came quickly. So once you were given one idea and you're trying to absorb that, another one would come along and slap you in the face.
Yeah,
I mean, like, the pacing was like fine in terms of the plot, but it was just, you know, it's a lot to take in at once.
Okay, that's fair enough. Right, shall we move on to me?
Yeah.
Tucky, are you ready for this?
I'm ready for this.
Manga UK have basically released, or re-released, or re-released. I don't know how many times this has been released now. Transformers, the movie, and not the Michael Bay movie. We're talking the original, was it 1988, was it?
I was just a wee nipper when it came out.
The original...
it's old.
Yeah, the original 1986 animated feature-length movie about the Transformers, and they released it on Blu-ray, and it's, on Blu-ray they've got the full-frame feature and the widescreen version. Now, this is 30 years old, right? So the idea of spoilers is basically a nonsense. The whole story is basically... the Autobots are on Earth. They've got Autobot City, and they're working with some of the humans. Megatron is on Cybertron and decides to launch a surprise attack on Earth using one of the Autobots' own supply shuttles, which Ironhide is piloting. So Megatron takes the Decepticons. They attack the shuttle. They kill the Autobots on the shuttle, and I mean actual kill. Because there's a whole point on the shuttle where Ironhide gets his... you don't see his head blown off, but you know Megatron at that point has basically killed Ironhide by blowing his head off, right? This sneak attack on Autobot City on Earth, and at that point, Optimus Prime and the other Autobots are in space, traveling to Earth, and they're going there because they know the sneak attack's happening at the moment, so they're going there to reinforce the city. Something that has lasted with every kid who watched this movie when they were about 9 years old, which is Stan Bush with the touch. Tucky?
Yes, the one definitive memory of this movie.
No, there's two. There's this one.
There's Optimus.
Yeah, but we'll get to that in a bit. But yeah, the touch. The touch. The thing is, it was such a well-done scene where you had the da-da-da-da. And then Stan Bush going, "You got the touch!" And Optimus Prime going, "Megatron must be stopped, no matter the cost." And then just basically transforming into his lorry mode and literally wiping the floor with Decepticons before going one-on-one with Megatron. And for kids, you know, especially if you watch this for the first time in 86, which I did, right? Because I was 11, and this was pre-internet days. This was before we had, you know, high-class video game consoles, stuff like that. So for us, this was pure entertainment. And especially if you grew up with Transformers like I did, you know, with the original cartoons and Arrival from Cybertron and stuff like that. This was a version of Transformers we'd never seen before. We had Autobots and Decepticons actually killing each other, which never happened in the main series. For the first time, we had this idea of death in a kid's cartoon, and we saw that quite literally with the death of Optimus Prime in this movie, you know?
Oh, that sounds spoilery, but I guess it's a super old movie.
Yeah, it's 30 years old, and everybody knows Optimus Prime dies in this movie. But it's the way he dies. It's, you know, when people talk about the saddest death scene in an animated film, or in anime in general, right? Yeah. Transformers is anime, and I would say that for a lot of people, the death of Optimus Prime was actually one of the saddest scenes, especially for us when we were children.
Oh, definitely makes a top three.
You know? Makes sense. I mean, it's Optimus Prime.
Yeah. Optimus Prime on his deathbed, surrounded by friends and allies, saying, "Don't grieve," and handing over the Matrix of Leadership to Ultra Magnus, and Ultra Magnus saying, "I'm not worthy." Optimus Prime saying, "Nor was I, old friend. But one day an Autobot will rise from our ranks and use the power of the Matrix to light our darkest hour. Until that day, till all are one." And then he dies. And the whole idea of the color fading from his body and his body turning gray, you know, just that whole idea of rigor mortis setting in was just, it was something totally unbelievable for a kid.
It does sound pretty weird for a Transformer. I mean, when you said deathbed and Transformer together, like, that idea was pretty amusing to me, because I could imagine him in a giant hospital or something, or on top of a car park, but him turning grey seems to be, like, the icing on the cake. But I guess they did it well enough that it worked.
Imagine that you're 11 years old, or younger, and you're a huge Transformers fan, and the Transformer that represents all of them is Optimus Prime. He's, like, the hero, right? Because he was the hero of that time. And then he dies, and you see him die, you know.
It's powerful imagery as well. I mean, like, say, back then, VHS or, like, terrestrial television was the height of technology.
Yeah.
So you see that on TV. I mean, what was it, that Doctor Who episode where he actually gets drowned or something and there was outrage?
Yeah.
I was surprised, like, "Oh, my kids are watching death. I'm very unhappy with this. I'm going to write to my local MP." Somebody actually did write to the local MP about it.
Yeah, they did. The other nice thing about the original Transformers movie, Transformers the movie, was it had two sides. It was kind of the old guard and the new guard. So it introduced a lot of Transformers, especially the triple changes that we hadn't seen before. And you actually had a female Transformer for the first time with RC.
Remote control?
No, female. Her name is RC.
Oh, okay.
Spelled ARCEE.
Okay.
You know, she was a motorbike, and you actually had a female Transformer for the first time. But it was very much the changing of the guard. I think that was one of the key things about this film, was that it was very much the changing of the guard, because after the death of Optimus Prime, you had the young soldier learning responsibility, learning sacrifice, learning all of these things in order to become the new leader of the Autobots. Because that's exactly what Hot Rod had to do, isn't it, Tucky?
Oh, aye, Hot Rod.
Yeah.
For Rodimus Prime.
Yeah. Because he was the one who would light the Autobots' darkest hour. Oh, not just the Autobots. He'd light the darkest hour of all of the Transformers, whether they were Decepticon or Autobots, because they were up against the ultimate threat, Unicron, a world that eats other worlds, a giant Transformer that transforms into a planet.
Like the Death Star.
No, this thing literally just eats those worlds. You know, like Galactus consumes worlds in the Marvel Universe? Unicron is basically the Transformers Universe's version of Galactus. But Unicron just basically tears chunks out of the world and stuffs them into his mouth.
Awesome.
Right? And all the Transformers are like the size of his fingernail.
Mm.
This movie as well, the Dinobots as well.
Yeah.
And I remember that was a merchandising masterstroke, that, because Dinobots sold really well.
Well, the Dinobots were from the main series, but this was where they really shone, especially with Grimlock going, "Me Grimlock no kisser, me Grimlock king." I know this movie so well. I know this movie like the back of my hand. I've watched it so many times over the years. And the thing is, I could still happily sit down and watch this movie because the soundtrack was just really fun. You had a couple of songs by Weird Al Yankovic in there, like Dare to Be Stupid.
Really?
Yeah. Dare to Be Stupid. It was my
This is like a Japanese movie as well, isn't it?
It was my first introduction to Weird Al Yankovic, and when it first came on was when they have the fight with the Junkions and the on the planet of junk, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the Junkions, they talk TV. It was my first introduction to the universal greeting, Ba Weep Grana Weep Ninibong. Oh, Ninibong, sorry.
I love the sound. I'm just thinking back to the soundtrack, like the music that was in it.
It was really good for a kids' movie.
Yeah. What was that song? Nothing's Gonna Stand in Our Way. Sorry, Spectre General, Nothing's Gonna Stand in Our Way.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing's gonna stand in our way. Not tonight. See? I even know the soundtrack. That should tell you how many times I've seen this movie. And here's the thing, right? It's been re-released again on Blu-ray. And they've done some tweaks and changes over the years, cleaned it up, made the sound better, everything like that. And that's all great. That's all well and good. And it does look good. It does look so much better than the DVD version. It sounds better than the DVD version. And this is...
It's the 30th anniversary this year, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And this, to me, though, is childhood. And the reason why this is particularly poignant to me is because on 4Panel, I've been covering a series from IDW. IDW have basically, this year, they announced that they were doing the Transformers comic, Rom, Space Knight, who is also another one of my childhood icons when it comes to superheroes, because Rom used to be with Marvel Comics. Micronauts, which is another former Marvel comic series, which I absolutely adore, and various others. And they did this thing called Revolution, which was basically my entire childhood took on comic book form and had one of my childhood battles against each other. You know, when you have all your toys and you have this imaginary war going on where everybody is fighting everybody else.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They did that.
I don't so do it anymore.
No. They did that. IDW did that. And it's called Revolution. And it was my childhood in a comic book form. You had the Transformers versus Action Man versus G.I. Joe versus Mask, Mobile Armor Strike Command versus Rom Space Knight versus the Micronauts.
Battle Royale Revolution of Death Battle before Death Battle was a thing.
Yes, it was literally my childhood there. All it needed was a random He-Man, a bunch of Thundercats, and...
Stick some gummy bears in there as well.
Yeah, and some gummy bears. Yeah, just some. Just the little jelly, the jelly gummy bears. You know, the fruit flavored ones. Just some of those.
They're just
fine.
In the way. They just get stomped and slashed into.
No, because the gummy bears cartoon was on, but we couldn't actually afford the gummy bears toys, the official Disney ones. So we had like the little jelly bears.
Oh,
so
I feel getting old now.
That's what I mean. This is why this is particularly poignant for me, because I've just gone through Revolution from IDW, and that was just, it blew me away. I was sitting there, you know when you walk into a movie and you just sit there, and from beginning to end, it's just exhilaration, adrenaline rush, exhilaration, adrenaline rush, and you walk out and you just think, my God, I want to see that again, but not for a while. I think I need to relax and sleep this off. First, like Mad Max Fury Road, right? It was just adrenaline rush all the way through and really well scripted, really well done. IDW's Revolution was like that for me. It was just all my childhood nostalgia and all those childhood fights to find out which hero was the strongest, which side was the strongest, stuff like that. All of that rolled into one in the comic. And then this, the Transformers 30th anniversary Blu-ray movie from Manga UK, just caps it all off as... I feel satisfied, Tucky.
Got to be some happiness this year.
There has to be, and I found it. And I would advise anybody who is in my age group who also enjoyed those battle royales between their toys, you know, Transformers versus Action Man versus G.I. Joe versus Thundercats versus He-Man versus, you know, whatever imaginary characters you came up with, I would advise anybody to go out and find the IDW comics series the Revolution series. So you have Ram Revolution, Transformers Revolution, stuff like that. And just read it. You'll enjoy it. Seriously. And if you can't find it, then go out and get yourself Transformers the movie. Because you're worth it, right? This is nostalgia on a disc, on a plate, served up to you. It's just as good as it was then. And yes, okay, there are issues with the movie, right? But it's a 30-year-old movie. It can be forgiven for those issues. They didn't know as much as we do now. So when they talk about, you know, when they go into the science babble about various things.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously, it's a kid's movie for one, and it's 30 years old for another. So some of the science babble doesn't quite hold up, but it's Transformers the movie. In a world where we have Michael Bay just churning out sequel after sequel after sequel of utter twaddle, sometimes you just need a little bit of childhood fantasy, don't you?
Yeah, just think that they should bring out a movie where it's just all your toys battle Hasbro Wars.
Well, they tried doing that with something like Small Soldiers, didn't they?
Yeah, but Small Soldiers was alright as well.
I liked Small Soldiers. I thought it was an interesting idea. And it's
Archer, leader of the Gorgonites.
Yeah, and they kind of played on that whole idea a little bit in Toy Story as well, didn't they?
Yeah, but they didn't go further enough.
No, they didn't. But I do like the idea of just all of my childhood toys in a war to gain supremacy of the playroom. Who's going to be king of the playroom for this day?
Just before we end the segment, I want to do I want to correct something about Punchline.
Yes.
Yeah, one sort of quick correction about Punchline is it's not developed by 5PB. The game that is coming out is going to be developed and published by 5PB, but the studio is actually Studio Mappa that made it, and it's directed by Yutaka Uemura. So,
okay, right. So, Transformers and Punchline, as you said, Lewis, Punchline sounds like one that you've got to watch yourself and make your own mind up about.
I feel like technically it's quite good. As I said, the voice acting was pretty good as well. Like, all the aspects of it seem to work, but there's a lot of elements to it that are going to be quite polarizing.
Interestingly enough, I think that Transformers, the movie, the original 1986 movie, is also one that people should watch and make their own mind up about. Especially if you've got a kid who's into Transformers, maybe you let them watch this as well. Because it's a movie that we watched when we were kids.
You couldn't escape it because I got on the terrestrial telly for the 90s as well. So
yeah, it's a movie that we watched when we were growing up. And it's interesting to find out what your own kids, if you have them, think about this movie. Because it's a movie that you've enjoyed and maybe they'll enjoy it as well. So if you have kids and you have fond memories of Transformers the movie, watch it with your kids.
Mm.
You know? Maybe they'll be running around the house going, "You got the touch! You got the power!" I'm not even going to attempt to sing.
That was 80s metal.
It was total hair metal. It was total 80s hair metal. And the thing is, at anime conventions, even now, 30 years later, you put that on and you'll have just a horde of people invading the dance floor and just all going, "You got the touch!"
It's a staple now. I think we've played it every SunnyCon after party since the start.
Yeah. Is it 5 years into SunnyCon? Coming on your sixth year?
Yeah.
You know,
and over half a decade, and it still brings people out.
Yeah. And how many other anime conventions have you been to, Tucky, where you put that on?
At least 90% of them, and I go to a lot of anime conventions.
Exactly. I will leave it at that. It's become a community thing. It's not just its own thing anymore. It's become a community thing. It's Transformers the movie, and a lot of people use it to fight back against the Michael Bay movies, because Michael Bay Transformer movies were what we thought we wanted.
Until it came out, and it's pretty obvious it's a completely different audience.
The Michael Bay Transformer movies were what we thought we wanted, but these, the original 1986 Transformers the movie, this is the Transformers movie we deserve. Anyway, we are at the end of the show, so we will catch up with you guys next week. And just a quick reminder, you can find all of our shows on Mixcloud, YouTube, iTunes. If you are listening through iTunes, then please leave us a review, a rating. It helps with the exposure and also gives us a little bit of valuable feedback so we can continue improving. And so on that note, we will see you all next week. I have been Rob.
I've been Lewis.
And I've been Chucky.
So, toodaloo, I'm off to play with my Transformers.